I'm back to recording the podcast today. I've been quite busy as I am working on a short film, on a role for a short film, and I've also joined a choir, and I'm learning to play the ukulele, so somehow I haven't been working on the podcast as much. Although I am going to record today the first part of Notes on Macbeth, just in time for Halloween. I'm hoping to be releasing this episode before Halloween. So this is going to be done in two parts, and this is the first part. I attended a workshop on Shakespeare's Macbeth with Owen Horsley, a Scottish-born director who has directed various plays for the Royal Shakespeare Company, including some of their history plays. So these are the notes that I took during the workshop. I was excited to work on Macbeth because this is not one of Shakespeare's plays that I know well. I've always been a bit uncomfortable with the themes it deals with. I found it quite scary when I was younger. I suppose I wasn't ready to explore the negative emotions evoked. Some of the actors I worked with on the workshop had been in productions of the play, and a good point was raised when someone said, "I wonder what it's like to work on Macbeth now, today. What is going to be different from the experience I had when I worked on it in the past?" So here I share with you my impressions, some of the things I learned during the workshop, my process as an actress, my point of view and personal experience. We started by reading a synopsis of the story, as it is important to understand the story and how the words of the play are connected to the story. What is the experience of being in this particular story? It's good to note that there is no backstory in Shakespeare, and the characters have a life and exist only in the story that is happening in the moment. In this play, we are looking at the struggle of an individual against the powers of darkness, and is also a study of various types of kingship, as well as the opposition to divine kingship by the forces of darkness in the form of traitors, weak-minded beings, false believers, and the misuse of power only for personal gain. All this can also apply to oneself, our sovereignty, our inner kingdom, those voices inside ourselves that keep us from moving forward and growing in new directions. There is a possibility that Shakespeare wrote this play as a celebration for King James VI, as this monarch loved witches. King James had a strong interest in this subject. The play starts with the three witches and the question, "When will we three meet again?" The three witches are supernatural beings, and they introduce the element of magic or magical thinking in the play. They speak in what can be called imperfect speech, as they are imperfect speakers, and they speak in an unusual rhythm. Shakespeare uses a regular rhythm, the iambic pentameter, and when the character goes off rhythm, it's because something has affected them, or the character's purpose is to affect the listener. The rhythm of the lines is what affects emotions. "Fair is foul and foul is fair, hover through the fog and filthy air." Fair and foul are extremes. Shakespeare is playing with polarity here, and when we hear those words played by the actor, we think of things that are in opposition. In the world of this play, evil is all pervasive. Fair and foul, and also true or false, as we do not know who is really speaking the truth. We found the opposite of these words: fearless, afraid, control, powerless, ambition, settle, transformation, being the same, human, inhuman, conscious, unconscious, innocence, treachery, femininity, masculinity, violence, kindness. The witches' rituals involve animals and the elements, like fog, the filthy air, the cat, the toad, and the third witch is the one who knows the future of the play. The witches sense the change in the elements, the change is in the air. The three voices of the witches create a spell. The witches are powerful, supernatural beings who operate outside the rules of society.
Fair is foul,
and foul is fair.
hover through the fog and filthy air.
There is a really interesting shop in London. It's called Treadwell's and it's dedicated to witchcraft. In the summer, I went to an event there. I attended a book launch of this book called Witchcraft, A History in 13 Trials by Professor Marion Gibson. I got lost on the way there, so I was late, and I got there just in time for the question and answer part of the event. The book tells of real stories of people who were convicted of witchcraft. These were people who were very unique, authentic, and thought outside the box, and therefore posed a kind of threat to society, to the society of the time, as if magic is something demonic, something to fear. Also, in some cases, the sexual history of the person was taken into account, and the individual was judged because of their sexual history, as it was seen as something taboo, something dangerous, and it was held against an individual. Back to the play. After the scene with the three witches, Banquo and Macbeth are returning from the battlefield after defeating enemy forces. They're coming back from a bloody battle. They are intoxicated by violence and adrenaline, and on the heath they meet the three witches. In this encounter, the witches enhance their sense of power using the vibration of violence as they prophesy that Macbeth will be made a Thane of Cawdor, a rank of Scottish nobility, and eventually King of Scotland. In the scene with Banquo, Macbeth and the witches, a seed of danger is planted. Banquo is aware that evil is present, but Macbeth is not. These are the famous lines from Banquo's speech.
If you can look into the seeds of time and say which grain will grow and which will not, speak then to me, who neither beg nor fear your favours nor your hate.
Macbeth is intrigued by the possibility that the prophecy is true, but he is also doubtful. He does not fully believe that it is possible for him to be crowned king. He writes ahead to his wife, Lady Macbeth, telling her what the witches said. But Lady Macbeth is not uncertain like her husband. She believes that the prophecy is true, because she desires for her husband to be crowned king. She, in fact, finds several reasons why Macbeth should kill Duncan and overrides all of her husband's objections, persuading him to commit a fatal evil act that very night. Together they then plan to get Duncan's two chamberlains drunk so they will black out. The next morning they will blame the murder on the chamberlains, who will be defenseless and they will remember nothing. And here we are looking at the concept of what is true and what is false, as it is found again in the speech by Lady Macbeth. Look like the innocent flower, but be the serpent under it. I found a link with the play Naked by Pirandello. I wrote a solo performance piece based on this play and performed it at the Camden's People Theatre in 2000. My piece is called Hashtag Eco Variable Bianca. Explores the thin line between reality and illusion, what is true and false, and the dark side of femininity. The story tells of desire, obsession, and sexuality, which are the cause of the death of a child due to negligence of the two main characters. In Macbeth is the desire for power and control, which pushes Lady Macbeth to want her husband to commit murder. Lady Macbeth says, "Come to my woman's breasts and take my milk for gall." The language suggests that her womanhood, her feminine nature, represented by breasts and milk, usually symbols of nurture, is blocking her from performing acts of violence and cruelty, which she associates with manliness. In this frightening speech, when she calls in the spirits to unsex her hair, she connects with the witches, gaining her strength from the powers of darkness. The raven himself is hoarse, that croaks the fatal entrance of Duncan under my battlements. Come, you spirits that tend on mortal thoughts, unsex me here, and fill me from the crown to the toe, top full of direst cruelty. Make thick my blood. Stop up the access and passage to remorse, that no compunctious visitings of nature shake my fell purpose, nor keep peace between the effect and it. Come to my woman's breasts and take my milk for gall. You murdering ministers, wherever in your sightless substances you wait on nature's mischief, come thick night and pour thee in the dunnest smoke of hell, that my keen knife see not the wound it makes, nor heaven peep through the blanket of the dark to cry, hold, hold. Thank you for listening, and I will be continuing with notes on Macbeth later on, and I hope you enjoy the podcast, and thank you very much for the people who are listening. I'm really grateful, and I will be back soon. Thank you. Bye. Look like the innocent flower, but be the serpent under it. When will we three meet again? Fair is foul and foul is fair. Hover through the fog and filthy air. Fair is foul and foul is fair. Hover through the fog and filthy air. If you can look into the seeds of time and say which grain will grow and which will not, come to my woman's breasts and take my milk for gall.